Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 523 for comics originally released on August 16th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Dark Knight's Metal Number 1. This is part of the kind of the big crossover event thing, I guess, that they're doing. It's not like a full event, but it's crossing over into a number of things, so it's a quasi-event. Regional incident, whatever you want to call it. Anyways, but this is by Scott Snyder. We got Danny Meekie on art, this is, you know, I enjoyed The Forge quite a bit. I thought that was a lot of fun, but the casting didn't work as well for me. So this has kind of had an odd cadence. How did you feel on those two?
I'm right with you. I enjoyed The Forge a lot, and then casting kind of, I didn't feel it. I wasn't as impressed. And so this is, this was kind of hopefully going to be an upswing for me. I was hoping that.
That doesn't sound promising.
No, I mean, I thought it started really strong. I thought this book started really strong with the Voltron battle, and it was really cool and inventive and great art. And as it went on, it could have been my state of mind or something, but I found it meandering a little, and it didn't keep my attention. Although there were some nice Easter eggs and stuff thrown in here, and good fan service that got people excited.
It definitely had some ups and downs. The whole Voltron thing at the beginning didn't work as well for me, because one, that's not what I want when I'm reading about the Justice League, and two, they've already done this sort of shtick with them and robots and stuff elsewhere before, and yeah, it was all right there. There were a couple of things about this that I really liked. Seeing Red Tornado again, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, that was fun.
I'm a fan of that character. It's a shame nobody seems to recognize him, and his entire backstory seems to be null and void. But, you know, well, all right, we at least get him back. I was surprised they brought in the Blackhawks, and was surprised by this Lady Blackhawk. But bringing them into the mix was fun. The Blackhawks were, of course, not only just a long time, you know, DC kind of war series or whatever from, I think, World War II or whatever, but in the New 52, they had done a modern day version of the Blackhawks. It lasted, 8 issues maybe, so bringing them back again, little surprising. When we get the introduction to, what did they call them? The Phantom Frequencies as disrupting time and space. I mean, that was actually a fun explanation for things like Dinosaur Island, Themyscira, Skataris, Nanda Parbat. And, you know, it's like, oh, that's how these things that people can't find and can't get to kind of sort of exist. Okay, that's fun. When they lumped Blackhawk Island into that mix as one of these kind of hidden places, didn't see that coming. A little surprising, but all right, we'll go with it. And when we're on Blackhawk Island and we get this big statue of Hawkman, and we're getting told all these wonderful things Hawkman's done. I like Hawkman, but it looks like DC's making another play at making him relevant again, and it might work, but it to me, that's kind of the almost potentially the thumbprint of Geoff Johns, more so maybe than Scott Snyder. I don't know whose idea it was to bring in Hawkman, but Geoff Johns has done a lot with him over in JSA and stuff, and I think has a great affinity for the character, which is understandable. He's a cool character, but he's also one that's had a number of go-rounds and is one of those perennial almost were sort of characters. What shocked me was the inclusion just through an image of the Will Payton Starman from, I think, the 80s. Are you familiar with that character? You know the one I'm referencing there?
Is that the James Robinson run or
no,
after?
Before.
Before.
There is the JSA Starman, and actually there's probably about 7 or 8, so we won't go through all of them. But before the Jack Knight Starman, which you were talking about there with the Robinson run, who is the son of the original JSA one, there was a series that lasted about 3 years in the 80s that featured just a totally disconnected Starman from any of the others. Flight, solar powers, a little bit of shape-shifting, and some other fun stuff.
Yeah, and he had the typography of his title had the star behind the A, I think, or something like that.
Sounds familiar. Yeah. I'd have to go look it up.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the one they're showing here. And he looks a little different, but it's like, either way, I like the character. Bring him back. I'm all for that. So at least seeing him acknowledged there was fun. Again, Easter eggs. Whether they come of anything or not, don't know yet. But, you know, having Will Magnus, the creator of the Metal Men, Thomas Morrow, a.k.a. T.O. Morrow, the quote-unquote creator of the Red Tornado, and I put quotes around that because while this one has no origin yet, old-school origin of the JLA version of Red Tornado, who actually was originally a JSA character, he had the Tornado Champion and Tornado Tyrant, two air elementals kind of trapped inside his robotic form, which is how he got the wind powers. Whether any of that'll hold true or not, who knows, and to a degree, who cares? We're at least getting Red Tornado back, so I'm happy with that. But bringing back the old-school Challengers of the Unknown, again, this is the kind of stuff I really liked about The Forge, where they're diving into the closet, pulling stuff out that they just haven't used for a while. Now, whether we just get teased with this, as DC has done for, you know, frankly, too many times, or whether they're actually going to start using some of these characters and stuff, I don't know, but I'm hopeful. What shocked me was when they pulled out the map of the multiverse from the Multiversity Guidebook, and now it's an in-story thing that Batman and the Justice League are sitting there looking at and stuff. That, I thought, was just a little mind-boggling to pull that into continuity, because, I mean, the Multiversity Guidebook was, what, over almost 2.5 years ago now. And then flipping it over to, it's like, well, there's something else. And we flip it over and there's black on the back. It's like, it was probably going to be printed white, but we'll go with black because, ooh, the dark multiverse. Kind of an interesting concept. Kind of not. We'll see how it goes. But it makes me question if there are going to be 52 dark universes, which, what would they be numbered? What, -0 to -51 or something? I don't know.
I don't think zero can be a negative, but.
I don't think so either, but it's on the map, and if there's a backside to the map that's a negative version of this, it implies, I mean, is it going to be a dark 0 through dark 52 universes?
The empty set?
I don't know. We'll see what they do. Clearly, there are going to be multiple universes on the dark side based on all the one-shots we're going to be getting. They're at least trying to expand the DC mythos, pull back in stuff from years gone by, which I like. The play at making Hawkman relevant, we'll see if it works or not. Either way, I am expecting a Hawkman, a Hawkwoman, or some such series is going to be in our future after all of this. If we get out of this whole thing and out of first quarter of 2018 without a Hawk-related title of some sort, and I'm going to include maybe JSA as a possible there, on the horizon or in our hands, I will be very surprised. I don't see why they would make such a play with the Nth Metal and Hawkman and stuff and not give it an ongoing series. So overall, I was generally pleased with what they did here. There were a few things I thought they could have done a little better, a few things that meandered a little. The reveal there at the end, totally unexpected, but it really goes to DC is bringing in a lot of things that haven't been used in years and just exploring kind of their entire toy box to a large extent. And I'm all for that. I think it's good. I think they did a good job here. Not quite the knocking it out of the park that The Forge was for me, but a very solid read, very enjoyable. And I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with all the different one-shots and tie-ins and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm less enthused about those. This was pretty enough to look at with enough fun things going on that I want to read the miniseries part of it. Will I jump to Titans, which I think is the next in the checklist?
Teen Titans, actually, yeah.
Probably not. So I don't think it's going to have enough to pull me in there. And then there's a plethora of these little one shot offshoots that I think I'll wait and see on and hear what folks are enjoying them. I didn't read all the Secret Empire tie-ins, so I don't think I'm going to read all these either. But yeah, this is beautiful art. A lot of fun stuff in here. I missed a few things. And when my brother and I were talking about it, he picked up on some things that I had missed. And so I had to kind of go back and say, oh, yeah, dummy. Yeah, I get it now. So I kind of glossed over. This is not a book that you read like Shirtless Bear Fighter. You know, you got to spend, you have to linger a little bit on the pages, and it takes a little more study as you read this, because there's a lot going on and there's a lot to digest, and some things you may not know.
So were those things that were just story elements that were lost on you, or are they more Easter eggs type stuff, like the Starman image?
Yeah. Yeah. It was more Easter eggs stuff and just exactly who the guy was at the end. It wasn't the one that I had remembered from the series that I read. So I kind of had to get it explained to me a little bit and to find out exactly who we were talking about and when in the series he did pop in and take over. So it was a bit of a, I just missed some things, and it could have been just me. And the way I read it, you know, I read a lot of comics back to back to back. And, you know, when you get in a cadence with a book, and then you find something that's a little more stuff to chew on, you've really got to kind of shift gears and pay attention, or you can easily miss something.
Well, and there's times I'm ready for that kind of a book, and other times I'm not. I'm just not in the right mindset to dive deep or whatever, or get all the Easter eggs or something like that. So, I mean, I get where you're coming from. Along those lines, do you have the checklist in front of you there? It was on the back of the inside, near the end there. You see where it's got the whole checklist of all the one-shots and stuff?
Yeah.
One of the things, and I'm sure it's something I should be recognizing, and I am not. We've got the six Dark Batman emblems or whatever. We've got the one with the lightning bolt there on the top left, which is obviously a Flash thing. A bat signal sort of a thing with a gear. Okay, that's the Cyborg thing. A bat with, like, Aquaman's thing. Okay, I got that. Then on the top right, we've got a bat with the WW for Wonder Woman. On the bottom right, we've got the bat with the Green Lantern emblem. Okay, got that. The one in the middle, though, on the right.
Shouldn't that be a Superman shield or something?
Does that look like a Superman shield?
It does not. But that's, shouldn't it? It makes sense that it should be, right?
Is that like the symbol for Zod or something? That's the symbol I'm not recognizing.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure somebody will point it out and I'll go, ah, yes, of course, I should have realized that. But I'm not quite there yet. So if somebody can help me out on that, I'd appreciate it. I'm thinking either the Indigo Tribe, which seems a little unlikely, or more likely, again, like you said, some kind of Kryptonian thing. Maybe that's the Kryptonian symbol for Bat or something. But all the others, I mean, it took me a little bit with the gear one. Oh, I guess that's Cyborg. To get where they were going with these, that one, like I said, kind of confused. But overall, I really enjoyed this. They're telling some fun stuff. I thought they had a lot of Easter eggs, but it wasn't something where you were kind of punished story-wise if you didn't get them. It's just kind of an added value if you do. And I like that kind of storytelling. But like I said, this didn't knock me out of the park as much as The Forge, but it worked better for me than the casting. I'm going to go with an A- on this. It sold well. And I'm looking forward to seeing, or at least The Forge sold well and the casting sold well. I assume this will too. I'm looking forward to how this series plays out. And more importantly, where they take the DC multiverse and stuff after this.
Yeah, for me, it's a B. I enjoyed it. Good stuff. I will finish this mini, I'm sure, unless it totally loses me in the future. But it didn't capture me with such... it didn't knock my socks off enough to where I need to chase things down and read it all. So I'll take a wait and see approach on some of those other tie-ins and just stick with this mini. But yeah, good start to it, and a really good creative team there.
So at this point, you're planning on getting Dark Knight's Metal, but not
one through six,
but not necessarily the tie-ins of like Teen Titans, Nightwing, Suicide Squad, etc.
Definitely not those.
And the one shots.
Maybe on the one shots if they are, if I hear that they're really good.
That makes sense. Seems perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they are doing a story in this mini series that should be coherent without all of those things. Hopefully the other stuff adds context. Yeah. But
that's what Scott Snyder and Jim Lee said on that video about this, that you'll be able to just read Dark Knight's Metal and you won't be punished if you don't read the whole thing. So,
but that's
I'm going to take them at their word.
That's where these crossovers, it's kind of a almost damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of a thing. Because if you can read it without having to get the crossovers or the other issues, what do you get out of that? Because it's got to be unimportant enough that the main story can survive without it, but almost important enough to be worth getting. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, for Secret Empire, very similar in that vein, those have been fun side stories that exist in the world of the miniseries. Some are really well-told stories and fun to read. They don't matter. They don't impact the greater story that much. And they often get referred to by a sentence in the main event story and with an asterisk that explains to you what happened. And so, yeah, your mileage would really vary. Sometimes they're just useless stories that aren't even very well told. And then that's a disappointment. But when some of them are really well told and fun to read, but they really don't matter.
Well, I think there's an art to writing a good tie-in to an event thing, and it's, I think, incredibly challenging to write a really good one. I remember, I think it was one of the crossover tie-in things for Infinite Crisis, where it was featuring Nightwing and Superboy, and essentially they got from point A to point B, had a little tiny adventure in the meanwhile. From the main story point of view, you know they got from point A to point B. You don't really care. I mean, that's all you had to know. The fact they had a little side adventure ultimately doesn't matter. Whether it's entertaining enough for you or not, your mileage may vary. So it'll be interesting to see where they fall on this stuff, how much of it is fun side stories that add to the bigger picture, and how many are either irrelevant and missable or feel a little more essential than they may have originally let on. And it's a really tough balancing act for the creators to do.
Yeah, and I don't know that I have enjoyed an all-inclusive event and chased things down since the original Secret Wars. So it's been a long time since I've really thought it worked. And I've missed a few of the events, so I can't say I've read them all. So, but it's not often that a publisher can pull it off.
Yeah.
Have the great event, line-wide tie-in. All the tie-ins are really important and cool and must-reads. I don't know when that's happened since then.
I think there have been a few where it may, and I stress may, have happened. Aspects of Secret Invasion at Marvel come to mind. Aspects of I'll blank it on the name. When the Green Lantern event over at DC, Blackest Night. Thank you.
Yeah.
But there's certain aspects with both of those where a lot of the side stories are hitting very similar story beats. So even if they're good individually, if you read too many of them, maybe not so much. So it's challenging to get something where the entire checklist is, wow, this was amazing.
Yeah. Do you remember, was it the Convergence, around Convergence time, when every Convergence had the same template?
Yes.
And they would repeat. So if you read any quantities of at all of these books, you ended up reading those same story beats over and over and over again. And it was maddening.
Speaking of that, let's move on to our Marvel title, which is, in this case, it's Generations Wolverine and All New Wolverine number one. We were just talking about a kind of a quasi-event sort of a thing like this is, and the formulaic aspect. Now, I read the previous two Generation one-shots right before reading this, because I'm trying to catch up on my reading. And the basic formula for this is it seems like someone or something is plucking the present-day version of some of these characters and dropping them into the past to interact with their predecessor, and for them to get some sort of insight or perspective or, you know, enlightenment or whatever. And at this point, I'm not really sure or really care who's moving some of these characters through time or whatever. I've got a wild guess or two, you know, Franklin Richards. I don't think it's the Watcher, but, you know, who knows? So there's that aspect of, if I keep reading these, are they all going to have the same basic story beats? Oh, somebody wakes up. Where am I? Oh, here's my predecessor. Oh, we have an interaction. Should I tell them I'm from the future? Should I not? Oh, I learned something and it changes my perspective. And, oh, I'm fading out and going back to the future. If they're all like that, that'll get a little more annoying as I go on. All of that having been said, this particular issue, I mean, it's been a couple of years, I guess about 3 years since Logan was killed off in the Death of Wolverine miniseries. And this, a lot of this was just a classic Wolverine story featuring Logan and stuff. And that in and of itself was a lot of fun. The interaction between Logan and Laura, the all-new Wolverine, was great. And particularly since she's grown and evolved and become comfortable with her role as Wolverine. So to see kind of the two of them almost at their kind of, I don't say their peaks or whatever, but in top form was great. And in this case, it seemed to be Logan who got the insight and advice, not Laura. So a minor shift on the formula. But combine what I thought was a really solid Wolverine story for both Wolverines, fun interaction between them, and the art by Ramon Rosanas, terrific. Absolutely first class. And really kind of plays up, okay, these guys are getting sliced and diced, but it's not gory, it's not bloody, it's action-packed, and just some very clean art. The biggest downside to this is I really don't think it needed to be $4.99, but it was good, so, you know, I'll kind of forgive a little of that. This is the exact sort of thing I would like to see in, like, an ongoing Wolverines plural, were they to do such a series. This would be what I would want. I like this, I thought it was fun. Is the generation stuff feeling a little formulaic? Yes. Did the formula work here? Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty solid. I really liked this stuff about Logan kind of meeting her for the first time, and wow, she's faster than me. She's mm-hmm. more precise than me. I may be a little bit stronger than her, but she's ever bit my equal here, or exceeds. My strength and or my what I can do,
the grace and skill, I think particularly is where she exceeded. Yeah
and I'm the best there is at what I do, so that was really fun. There was some touching stuff there with when she calls him dad or father or something like that at the end. I mean, that was really touching, and I thought that hit the right beats. I'm old school on Wolverine character design, so he's too tall and skinny for me. I don't like that version of Wolverine, but I know it's Hugh Jackman-esque, so I guess I gotta go with it. But yeah, this was fun. It was a nice one-shot deal. I had read the Hulk combo, and I hated it. I was worried about this one, but I thought this was a lot stronger.
Did you read the Jean Grey Phoenix one?
No, I didn't even bother with that one.
Okay. It was better than the Hulk one, but I think this was better than that one.
Yeah. But yeah, this was fun. I don't really know what they're doing here. I don't think I've done enough research on just what this is about and how this leads into Legacy and, what the deal is. But yeah, if I look at it as it's a nice 34 page one shot that they added a dollar to unnecessarily, then I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it, and I just take it for face value, and I don't really get anything more out of it than that, anything kind of greater movement towards a larger storyline or anything like that. I don't care how they got there, and it's just I like the story part, and that was fun.
I am curious if there is a larger thing building up here, that if these insights, because I'm behind on my Marvel stuff, I don't know if these are falling into particular places in the continuities of the all-new Wolverine, the Totally Awesome Hulk, or Jean Grey, and if the insights that people are getting are going to matter or not, or what's going on here, or if it'll only matter once we get to Legacy.
Not in this case. I'm current on all-new Wolverine, and no. And
okay.
And I don't think they do a good job in these of saying that this is a strange thing that's happening, and you know, it just happens. So I don't think the readers really get any sense of, well, this is really a cool thing that's happening. No, it's just a device. It's just a MacGuffin to get these two characters together and just brush it off as nothing more than that.
Well, and how quickly the time-traveling character in each one just kind of accepts that they've been plucked and dropped somewhere.
Right, because that's what, you know, it's no big deal.
Well, apparently not.
Yeah.
I mean, they at least toy with that a little in the Jean Grey Phoenix one. Because Phoenix is like, oh, you're from the past. And she's like, the future, actually. It's a long story, you know. And I thought that was kind of a funny thing. But it's clearly, like you're saying, they're wanting to tell a story where they can kind of compare and contrast the current and previous versions of some of these characters, and that's fun. Whether it ultimately matters or not is part of the question. But where they're going with this, all this stuff, you mentioned not having done the research, you shouldn't have to. And for me,
that's true.
I read the issue. I enjoyed the issue. I thought Tom Taylor got the characters, told a really good story if you're coming at it from either Logan or Laura's perspective. The art, again, was sensational. Maybe a little overpriced, whether it matters or not, so there's some lingering doubts there or whatever, but it was a fun done-in-one story. I'm going with an A- on this. I think if you like either or both characters, it's worth checking out.
I'm at another B. Enjoyed it. Really good story, and no number two to worry about. So I don't know that I will read any of the other team. Might read the Hawkeyes. I'm curious about the Hawkeyes, but that's the only other one that I'm really interested in. I don't know how many more are even left. So
just to point it out, it's technically Generations Hawkeye and Hawkeye. The reason I point that out is there is another one that is called Generations Captain Americas. Not Captain America and Captain America, or Captain America and Captain America and Captain America, because I think they've got all three there. There's a little inconsistency in how they're naming some of these things, and the fact that on the cover of this Wolverine one, it kind of implies it's Generations : the best. They could be a little clearer on what the title of the one-shot is.
Yeah.
But I'm a stickler for those things. You know how I am.
I don't think there's any sense that these should all be read, you know, that I get the sense you can just pick and choose your battles there.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's really no greater story being told.
That I'm not so sure, because I think they're all leading up to the Marvel Legends one shot.
So it'll be like an Omega or something?
Well, no, it's literally the Marvel Legends one shot.
And it'll start off, hey, remember when you got plucked out of time?
I have no idea if it'll reference it directly, but it may be that these insights matter at that point. They may not. I don't know.
If I was a betting man, I'd say no.
We'll see who's right and who's wrong. It could go either way, and I'm not saying you're going to be wrong. Safer bet side.
And to what degree does it actually lead up to something? You know, it's in a minor way, then we'll be splitting hairs on whether really was necessary or not.
And if it's not, then why do we have, 10 or 12 of these $5 one-shots?
Exactly.
That we won't be splitting hairs on, I bet.
Yeah, exactly.
So again, fun stuff. We'll see where Marvel's going. I've got some of what they're planning with the legacy stuff sounds interesting. Some of it, I think, is just, I'm my mind is boggled by what they're thinking, and if they really think some of this will work as well as it does.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So with that, let's move on to our other book. This is Genius Cartel number 1 from Image Comics. This is part of the Top Cow stuff. It came out of the Top Cow pilot season back in 2008, so it was like the second, maybe third go-round of the pilot season stuff. It did well. I forget if it actually won or not. But in 2014, they did the Genius mini-series of 5 issues, which was a lot of fun.
But they did them, they solicited all 5 of them in 1 week, or 1 month.
Yeah, that's right. It was a weekly thing. I'd forgotten about that part.
It was a really strange, and I think we probably touched on that during our review, because it, you know, you were either all in or not. You really couldn't sample it and decide. You really had to know if you were going to get all 5 issues. So it was an interesting choice that they made.
But at least you could base it on the pilot season that had come out, 6 years earlier?
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of distance between those two. So I don't think the sales were where they should have been, because I thought that was a really strong series and inventive and fun, and I liked it a lot. But I just don't think it had a chance because of the way it was solicited.
Well, I think the delays between the pilot season and the previous miniseries, it was insane. 6 years. We're now at, 3 years or so between that and this, which isn't doing this any good either. So I think the way they kind of did some of the stuff, if it had been in more rapid succession, not say as rapid as, 5 issues solicited in a single month rapid, of course, that would just be crazy. But they could have put this out in a more timely manner, and I think it would have helped it a lot.
And in those 3 years, we've retconned this character and who she is and what she's all about.
Oh, how do you justify that? I don't agree.
There were two references to two or three references to Black Lives Matter and her emphatically stating that Black Lives Matter and that had nothing to do with the last series. That movement, if it existed, was not on the radar and was not a part of that. And they have rebranded it for this character. And it was all about her being the better, smarter tactician. She could run the drug trade better than the LA cops and show them that they couldn't stop her. And there was nothing about Black Lives Matter. There was no greater cause except her keeping her neighborhood safe and running that drug business better than anybody else and outsmarting the cops.
Okay.
And so that I just thought, why are we doing that? I guess to give her more of a cause, I guess, to make her more redeemable, perhaps. But it bothered me that they did that.
That, frankly, I didn't pick up on that as a retcon. It didn't faze me at all. But did I mention it's been 3 years since I read Genius and another six since I read the pilot season? So I'm curious if I were to go back and reread the previous miniseries, if I would have felt that the Black Lives Matter was a part of that or not. But certainly I don't recall it being the crux of it.
No, it's just, it was a couple of lines thrown out. Just, oh, by the way, this is why she did what she did.
But certainly they make a big deal of it here. Absolutely.
And no mention. That was not a part of the last series. So I think they're not really playing fair here. And it's his creation. So the creator gets to do what he wants. But that didn't exist in the last volume. And I think that they're taking a little liberties with some of the Top Cow characters, too. This character feels less like the previous volume character and more like a cross between Samaritan and the think tank guy.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I was thinking this would be an interesting character to put into kind of that Edenverse world with those two.
It would be a seamless one because they're very similar.
Yeah, but I think they've got different specialties. She's the tactician. David Lauren from Think Tank is the inventor. And then you've got Samaritan, who's the hacker. And
be a great team.
Could add a few others, and it would be fun because you could also do it as almost the continual chess match between them, not to necessarily, you know, manipulate each other, but to either, you know, poke at each other. Because I think David from Think Tank is of the type that would just try to get under everybody else's skin or whatever. It could be fun. But yes, that was a very clear parallel that I made too between those characters.
Yeah, I checked and I was like, this isn't a Top Cow, is it? They didn't change imprints, and it seems to be. Well, yeah, it is. It is now
it
a
is.
Top Cow.
Well, it always was. Top Cow did pilot season.
Oh, it was okay. It was always Top Cow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just not part of
Edenverse.
The Edenverse officially. And I'm not saying it's not part of it. It's just different writer.
Yeah. Okay.
It's funny because the character is interesting. The stories were solid in the past stuff. I thought this was solid too. I'll grant. Okay, they've politicized it a little bit more this time. They went in the basic direction I expected of the lead character Destiny getting recruited by the government or a think tank or whatever to essentially be an operative, to be trained, to be channeled, to be used as a weapon. It took a little bit of a darker turn with how they were manipulating her. And the more I thought about it, the more I've come to the conclusion that, first off, the title of this is Genius Cartel. She's the genius, which presumably you're going to deal with a cartel or whatever. If she is a genius, a tactical, you know, strategic genius, is playing mind games with her to manipulate her really a good idea? If you're trying to use her and you've got the choice of a carrot or a stick, don't use the stick. She will take it and beat you upside the head with it.
Yeah, and I do get tired of the shadowy government organization, the Amanda Waller led organization, the Maria Hill led organizations. It just drives me crazy. You know, they, you know, it justifies the means, and they, I don't want to read about those anymore. So that kind of annoys me as well. I would kind of wish they would kind of get away from that. It did feel like they were, of course, she should be two steps ahead of this, because it's kind of obvious what they're doing. And she is so tactically smart, she should be able to pick up on this chess move. And so it felt a little weird. And this whole operation in the classroom scenarios, like it just seemed like they were redundant, these operations. And I don't understand what we were trying to get. Yes, she had the right idea all along, but then the operation still failed, and they were running it again. I didn't get what they were trying to do there, what they were trying to say with those operations.
I think part of it was, if you're going to train people on how to do these sorts of missions and whatnot, train them on the mission you're planning on sending them on makes a certain amount of sense. That way it's not, oh, it's like this. Oh, wait, it is this. I think part of what they were trying to train Destiny on here is being a little bit more of a team player and working better with others, which, if you go back to the pilot season and the previous miniseries, she was great at that. She had manipulated her entire, you know, block, region, you know, neighborhood, whatever, to her army.
Yeah.
So if she's not able to pick up on what's going on here with, oh, this one guy is you know, being, you know, used as a pawn in this chess game, she's an idiot, and we know she's not. It says so on the title. She's a genius. But then these two people leading this institute or whatever, I'm pretty sure they're not going to make it out of this story in one piece. It wouldn't surprise me if Destiny ends up running this organization. But so there's aspects of that that just seem a little silly or whatever. Again, if, like I said, if you're trying to manipulate geniuses, it seems like the smart move is to always use the carrot, because if the genius figures out what you're doing and, you know, you're being nice to them and it's benefiting them, they will help you help them. So you get more carrot to give to them, kind of a thing. It's a virtuous cycle versus, you know, Destiny leaves this issue, hopefully, feeling that she has been wronged and that somebody's got to pay. And that's not good for the people who wronged her and who are going to be held accountable for that in the course of this storyline.
Yeah, and there was a flawed logic about, let's give her something she cares about and take it away, and then she becomes a weapon we can point at other things. How? How does that not just turn her into looking for revenge
exactly on her
friend? It doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, this although I really love the last volume, so it's definitely going to get another issue or two from me. I don't even know if it's a 4-issue or a 5-issue or a 6-issue. I don't know what it is. But if she doesn't wisen up on the page and show the same moxie that she had in the last volume, I'm out. Because that's who she was then, and I don't want a total reinvention of her and them not to realize who she was. And I just hope that they right the ship as far as who her character is very quickly.
I agree with that. I mean, I'm going to stick it out to the end. I'm curious where they go with this, but they had a much more interesting character at the beginning of this issue than at the end of this issue, and that's always a shame when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's frustrating, because I thought they did a great job with the pilot season, a great job with the previous miniseries. So to then just to squander it the way they did. And it's not like this is irredeemable or anything. It was actually an interesting story. It had some good moments. It's just she didn't come across as the uber genius that she was. So I think they've got a little bit of damage control to do on this series, which is unfortunate. I want to see where it goes. I'm looking forward to it. It was fun, but at this point, I would recommend picking up the trade of the previous miniseries. It's a better read.
And it includes the pilot season in it, doesn't it?
I don't think it does, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't have the trade, and the research I did implied it might not, but I think they collected the pilot season stuff each year as its own trade. They should have.
Anything other notable ones in there that got their start in the pilot season that are still kicking?
You know, it's been long enough that I would have to do a little research to find out what was in each. There was usually one or two that was pretty good. There was one that was the kid who was a guardian of their little neighborhood or whatever that went for a 6-issue, 5-issue miniseries that was fun. And it was one, it's like, I liked the one-shot. It was brilliant, but how do you do this as a miniseries? But there have been a couple that have come out of the pilot season stuff. Part of it is you go in with, you know, 6 choices or whatever, and if you're pre-ordering or buying them off the rack, I mean, it's already a hard item for a retailer to carry because there's a lot of risk there. And as a reader, it's like, okay, I'm going to either try one or try up to 6 of them or whatever, knowing that whatever I read may not go any further than this. And there were obviously quite a few that didn't go any further with that, and a few that shouldn't go any further than that. Not many. Most were okay, but there were a couple, usually each time there was a fairly clear, in my mind, that's the one I would put my money on. But it's one that they did it 3 or 4 times, and on the last go-round, most of it was just in-house creators at Top Cow that was providing the content. Matter of fact, I think Kirkman got in on it and did a couple of the titles. And I don't know if any of those went on to series or not. Again, I'd have to go check what all they've done is pilot seasons, and then which of those continued on. It was a cool idea. It's just impractical.
I like the idea over maybe your more traditional anthology series. You know, I kind of like the idea that something will rise up and will become a series out of this. Not all anthologies have that component, and I kind of like that.
I guess the way I would do it is come out with like a trade paperback at a bargain price. It just puts a bunch of stuff out there, okay? Different creators, different properties, whatever. Or do it as one-shots or whatever. But have something to where if it goes to series, it goes to series. If it does not, either the one-shot was self-contained enough that you're satisfied, or they've got another one-shot to kind of resolve and wrap it up. It's like doing a one-hour pilot for a TV show that you can either take to series or do another hour and say it's now a TV movie and we're done. Because it was really annoying to read a bunch of stuff. It's like, I'd like more, and I'll never get it, and I know it.
Yeah, that's the problem with anthologies, is you get a taste of something, and it may or may not ever get finished.
Yeah. The issue had some process pages at the back. Normally, I really enjoy those sorts of things. This was just, here's the loose sketch, here's the pencils, maybe here's the inks. And it's like, you know, would it have killed them to put a little text from either the artist or the editor or something? Oh, well, so-and-so, you know, here's where he did the pencils. Here's, you know, something to where it's not, oh, yeah, we had a few things lying around, some thumbnails, and yeah, it didn't really change at all. But, you know, here, we'll just slap it on a page and fill 5 or 6 pages that way. It felt like filler versus any, there was no insights to be had from this, or at least none given, and maybe somebody can pull some out of it, but, the backup material there, as far as like a DVD extra goes, was a little wanting.
Yeah, those were didn't add a lot and pretty unnecessary.
For me, I'm going to go with a B- on this, and I'm disappointed and think it could have and should have been better. Certainly, I thought the pilot season was great and the previous miniseries was great. This was okay.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a C+. I had some problems with them kind of retconning the character a little bit, I really enjoyed that last volume, so I was surprised that this one didn't resonate more with me. I just think it was a little misstep here, and I'm going to give them a chance to right the ship, but yeah, for me it's just a C+.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. So since we talked last, I've done a little bit more reading, but, you know, I've still got a ton left to do. I am current on the DC Universe titles. That is not to say everything published by DC, but literally just the stuff in the DC Universe. I had tried to get caught up on that in time for the metal stuff, since they're starting to cross different titles and whatnot. My next goal is probably going to be part of the Marvel Universe, probably the Secret Empire stuff. There's just a ton of stuff over at Marvel that have piled up on me. I've got at least 100 issues.
It would be nice if you could get current on Secret Empire by Omega.
That is my goal.
We could review it.
that's my goal. We'll see if it happens. There's just a lot to do to make that happen.
Yeah.
what I've done is I've taken my reading list, I've tagged everything with kind of what narrative universe is it in, and just to get things to manageable chunks, because when I'm looking at a stack of three short boxes or whatever, 400 plus comics, it's like, damn, that's daunting. But like the Marvel Universe, I split that into Secret Empire, Spider-Man, X-Men, and Secret Empire, Spider-Man, X-Men, and the rest. I mean, because that right there is 145 comics, and 44 of them or thereabouts are Secret Empire. It's like, okay, that's manageable. Okay. If I want to chip away at the X-Men or the Spider-Man stuff, it's just the other 60 or 70 of the Marvel Universe. It's like, it's hard to find digestible chunks of, I can do 30 or 40 in an evening if I get home.
What?
That's if I get home and just start reading.
Oh my goodness.
And I've done that a time or two. I've had a few days.
I don't think I've ever read more than 10 comics in a night. 30 or 40, huh? Man. Are you like, you have like a photographic memory or something?
God, I wish. Some of these I was doing on weekends, so it may have been more than just, you know, an evening. But I've had a couple of times where I'm getting through like 30 or 35 or 45 or something. Not many. Other days I'm getting like 1, 2, 0. A lot of days I'm doing 0.
That's like a superpower. I can read 40 comics in after work before I go to bed. That's pretty amazing.
I can read it, but you quiz me on them, I'll do okay. It's like, okay, one of them was a street level hero.
What was Comic 17's cover?
I have a funny memory. Sometimes stuff sticks, sometimes it doesn't. And at one point, I would I had my comics downstairs, and I had a area set aside for reading them. And I would take the stack of comics for the week, I would read one, and I've got them bagged and boarded. So, you know, I'd put it back in the bag and board, I'd flip it over, and because that way they would stay alphabetical or whatever order I had them in. But there would be times that before I'd even picked up and unbagged the next book to read, I'm like trying to remember the one I just did. Now, literally, I had read it, bagged it, boarded it, flipped it over. And my recollection is, it was superhero. It wasn't a street level hero. Well, it was. It could have been Daredevil, it could have been Moon Knight, it could have been Batman, it could have been Punisher, it could have been Nightwing, it could have been, was it a male or female character? Let me think. Because there comes a point where you go through so many in that speed, sometimes the stories don't stick. Sometimes it's so little of a story it doesn't stick. Other times it's like, no, I can tell you exactly what happened. It was a really good story.
But now that you go through the exercise of finding it on the spreadsheet and grading it, does that help recollection? Because you're thinking about it a little longer?
It helps a little bit. I at least generally remember more of at least which title I've read. But sometimes it takes a little bit just to, it's as I got more and more comics kind of thrown into the mental filing cabinet, if you will, the indexing system has gone to hell. Because just like on the drive home tonight from work, I was trying to get my thoughts organized. For, okay, what am I going to talk about tonight? And I'm like, okay, well, DC, it was Dark Knight Metal. I remember that. I read a Marvel book. What was that? And it took a little bit. Oh, yeah, it was Generations Wolverine. I liked it, yada, yada. Genius, that one kind of stuck out a little bit more for me. But there are times where it's like, you know, it takes a little bit to warm the hopper or whatever. But once the information flows, it flows better. But that's also why when I read books to review, I've got a notepad +++ open here on my computer, and I'm sitting there typing in some cryptic notes. Oh, I want to mention that, hey, they brought Red Tornado back. That's cool. Or, you know, ooh, I really like the art or whatever. Because, you know, sometimes I'll read a few more between reading that and we review or do other stuff. And sometimes it's surprisingly easy to forget some of these things.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they're good. 20 pages, there's not a whole lot to grab onto. And it's funny because just looking at that breakdown, which is, again, by narrative continuity, everything from American Way or Astro City to the DC Universe to, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars or Young Blood or Young Animals or whatever, I've got close to 100 different narrative universes just in comics that I'm in some semblance of digesting. Not counting, again, all the movies, TV shows, and, oh, I've got this life and day job thing that eats up a little time, and, you know, memory space or whatever. So yeah, some of it sticks, some of it doesn't. Some of it a little more because I'm reviewing it or rating it at the very least. But yeah, some of them are forgettable, but there's some good stuff coming out.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's just some of it's coming out surprisingly fast.
Speaking of which, as we record this, the online previews catalog will go up tomorrow, so it will already been up.
Mm-hmm.
And folks are already posting online solicits for the next preview spotlight, and I aim to be one of the first ones to get my clips in.
You've been doing a great job of getting them in fast. I appreciate that.
I get bonus points in the imaginary point system that doesn't exist.
It sort of exists. Again, I cannot say how thankful I am that, you know, you send in stuff, people are posting on the forum, hey, I'm going to do these, and they do them.
Yeah.
Because again, it was only, I mean, it was a few years ago, but there was a period, a long period, particularly as the thing was ramping up or whatever, where I didn't know what clips, if any, I would have until they showed up that morning. And it's a little nerve wracking to think, well, you know, I've got this episode to go to, and I wonder how long I've got to ramble for to make it, at least a 20-minute episode or something. And to me, it's a lot more fun to hear what other people are saying about these comics than whatever I would, babble on about or whatever. So again, having people send that stuff in, huge help. I've got to, once they get the online solicits up, start figuring out what my picks are going to be, because, try to do that as early as I can as well.
So do you always do 10, or do you go a little lower, like to 8 or up to 12?
I usually try not to do more than about 9 or 10.
Okay.
But usually, my plan, and you will laugh as I say this because I don't hold to the plan, is I try to find one from each of the major premier publishers, Dark Horse, DC, IDW, Image, and Marvel.
Right.
And then 4 from the back half.
Now, that seems good. Good plan.
Nice, even mix. Of course, there are some times where, Dark Horse is doing some fabulous stuff, but sometimes it's the middle of a storyline, part 2 of Usagi, or, I talked about Gru last month, or, whatever. It's not not something I feel, ooh, people have got to jump on this issue.
Or it's part 6 of a 7-part series or something like that.
Or worse, part 4 of a 7-part. It's not even, it's dead center. It's not as it's ramping up or finishing up. So there's that. And there are some times where a given publisher or two, it's like, they've got a couple of really good things, I'll do a few more from either DC this month or Marvel that month or Image or wherever. Sometimes I'm really heavy on the back half. Sometimes I'm really light there. It depends what's in the previews that hits my interest.
That was the first podcast of yours that I ever listened to was the Preview Spotlight, and is still my favorite because it's just the nature of it and how unique it is and just how much fun the clips are to listen to.
Yeah, every once in a while somebody just knocks it out of the park. Jason's done that a time or two. Brawlinator's sometimes just done some fantastic ones. And sometimes somebody just has something that's either really funny or they've got a really good story about how they met the creator or why this means so much to them or something. And it's like, wow, you've moved me in some way. I love that.
Yeah. And it's super cool when the somebody who actually makes comics and they take the time to talk about other comics they like and that are coming out. And then, by the way, I have a comic coming out. If you want to check it out, it's this. And I'm like, wow, that was really cool. That was really cool when they did that because they were just like regular submitters just like us. But by the way, we have comics too.
What I love about that is when somebody does that and it's like, okay, here's a bunch of things that I like. It gives you a sense of what are their tastes? What sort of materials do they gravitate to? What do they think is cool and why? Which gives you a pretty good indication of, ooh, I'm liking all their other picks. Maybe I should check out their book. It's probably going to be something I'll like, versus hey, I've got this book and that's it. I mean, that's great too. I love it when creators do that. But the more you know about the creator and the property and stuff, the more likely you are to buy or the more passionate you are about buying it. And there's just so much stuff coming out through previews. As we record this, I have spent the last day or so in my spare time, finishing up my order for August or whatever, and it's like, here comes the September stuff. And as I'm doing it and updating my spreadsheet for the first time in, a month or two, I'm realizing, oops, I forgot to order this. Oops, I forgot to order this. Oops, I forgot to order this. Because there's just so much coming out, and there's such churn in the titles, it's easy to miss stuff.
You know, and I would believe it that I miss comics because I'm unorganized and haphazard and don't pay attention as much as you do. But you have automated systems, Excel spreadsheets, formulas, coding, technology at your beck and call. You probably have like some kind of robot in there sorting your comics for you and laying them out. You know, I can't believe that you ever miss a comic that you read regularly.
It happens. I almost missed Action Comics because they were doing three this time instead of two, and I lost sight of it.
Oh, yeah. Creature of habit, right?
A creature of habit, and it's just a matter of I've had a lot going on the last few months. You know, that whole Comic-Con thing, getting ready for it, getting recovering from it, those sorts of things. So, you know, I do have an Excel system, but I'll be honest, I've been thinking about lately that I need to find the time to enhance it. Because I grabbed the series code off of the master data file. Anyways, I pull it from the data that I use for the number crunching, because that way I can do some other stuff with it. But it identifies each series with a number, and I'm getting to the point where maybe to miss fewer things, I'll just tell it, here are the series I'm getting, add this to the list, and then if you see it next time, check it off as a, hey, I should consider getting this. In other words, I don't want to automate my order entirely. That just seems crazy. But I do want it to
present you with a draft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's like I have it give me a checklist to compare my packing list to every week when I get my shipment. And, you know, it's nice to do that versus having to scroll through everything I've got kind of currently in the pipeline. I can do the same thing and whittle down highlight the items in previews that I have been getting. And maybe I decide, you know what? This item is no longer on the list. That's cool. And obviously I want to check the things that are new, different, or one shots. But yeah, when I was going through today, I found a fairly staggering number of things that it's like, yeah, I should have ordered these things. I mean, like probably two dozen things. A few of which I knew were in that category, a few things I hadn't realized. I'm like, gosh, I haven't seen number two of this. And it turns out I hadn't ordered number two. It happens.
It's tough for them to send you number two if you had not ordered number two.
I do not expect anyone to do that. If I have not asked for something, I don't expect them to just out of the blue hand it to me. That, yeah, so it's on me. But it's one of those things that there's so many titles. They come and go. They vanish for a little bit, they come back, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to keep track. So that's, again, part of why I like doing the preview spotlight is when something vanishes for a bit and comes back, somebody's liable to say, hey, you know, did you realize Black Magic is back or whatever, to use a reasonably current example.
Did you have a teleconference already?
I did. Did that this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. Had, let's see, Jason, two or three other people. Maurice, shoot, I'm forgetting who. We talked about all kinds of stuff.
Wow, like a different group.
Yeah, it varies from month to month. It comes down to who's available and stuff. But it was a lot of fun. Good conversation. Talked about, obviously, some convention stuff, what people are reading, what they think of various things. Yeah. The next preview spotlight deadline is going to be Saturday, September 9th, the morning thereof. That's a week and a half after previews comes out. Online solicits coming out a week earlier than that. So, you know, plenty of time. And you don't have to have the physical previews to do one of these clips. Everything you need's online. Brawlinator and Jason are doing a great job posting that every month on the forum. Thank you guys for doing it. Huge help. And then the next teleconference is going to be Saturday, September 16th at 7 p.m. Central Time. We do it on Skype. There's instructions on the forum as to how to get on. All you got to do is send me your contact information ahead of time so I can actually, you know, loop you into the call. Then when you're ready, you just send me a text message on Skype saying, hey, is the call going? And if it is, I add you. If it's not, I start it with you and we start talking. So it's pretty casual, pretty laid back, but it's a lot of fun. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batgirl number 14 from DC, Cable number 4 from Marvel, and Generation Gone number 2 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.